This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning. Good morning, world, as we come your way from WGN West this morning in Scottsdale, Arizona, where the time is 3:08. That will all change the first weekend of November when daylight saving time goes off. And, of course, the state of Arizona is one of those states where they do not observe daylight saving time. So that means during the summer there's a two-hour difference, and then in the winter it drops back to the normal one-hour difference. Okay, that's our time lesson this morning. A lot of people to talk to, including Congressman Paul Gosart of the 4th District here in Arizona, who has come up with what I think is a unique piece of legislation that he has introduced dealing with all of the land in the West that's owned by the federal government. He has an idea for what to do with a lot of that land, and we'll get to that. We're also going to talk to the first lady president of the National Hay Association in its 123-year history. They have finally elected a lady from South Dakota as the national president. And Max Armstrong will stop by to talk markets with Bob Split of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois. So, yeah, we have a fairly busy time ahead of us here on this Saturday morning. And we'll go back a couple of weeks ago today to the Yavapai County Cattlemen's Club Calf Sale and Beef Barbecue, and again share another visit with one of the people who came to that event that this year celebrated its 85th anniversary. So all of that coming up when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Among the many visitors here at the Yavapai County event, Congressman from the 4th District of Arizona, Paul Gosart. Good to be back to visit with you and to talk about some current issues that you're working on. Let me start with your bill, the Herd Act. Tell me about that.
Yes, this is an act that mimics what Harry Reid did in Nevada. Basically what it does is it inventories a current law where the Forest Service and BLM identifies lands for disposal. Those lands are to be put up for sale, and the sale items basically are a 50-50 split between the federal government and the state government. 50% going to the federal coffers, and then the 50% that goes to the states, 15% would go to land-grant universities in that state, 15% would go to K-12 education, and 10% would go to the local governments in that jurisdiction. So it's a win-win situation. This mimics a program that Harry Reid did in Nevada, where he brought almost $5 billion to the state of Nevada in disposal of lands back to the states. So it's a wonderful application that not only rewards getting back some jurisdiction over our federal lands to the state, but also puts it in the proper coffers for education at the collegiate level with land-grant universities and K-12 education, and then businesses, of course.
Who would be the buyer of land of this?
The first choice or first refusal would actually be states and local governments. And that's how it was used in Nevada. That was a big deal because Nevada, Las Vegas was landlocked, and that's how they had that inventory of BLM lands. But they would have the first aspect of first refusal. And that's the way it should be.
And really, does the federal government need all this land?
It doesn't. I mean, you see this inventory growing over and over and over, where people give back their land back to the federal government for stewardship. There's got to be a two-way street. And, you know, east of the Mississippi, they don't have the same problems we do out here in the West. You know, they have all ownership of all their lands, and that's why they have a tax base, where we don't. And so we need to get back that claim. But we need to make that good argument that when it's closest to the people of governance at the state and local levels, they take care of it because they're true conservatives, because they're going to make sure that how they take care of it spreads that wealth for next year and future generations.
And how far along is your bill?
Well, we got some good co-signers this year. Last year, we put it in a hurry. We got 13 states put on right away from the Western United States. So we're going to eclipse that mark, and away we go.
And as I recall, you were active in wildfire legislation.
We are. We just had a big hearing on Wednesday in the resources agenda. And we've hit a point now where we had more forest fires burning around the West than we've ever had before. We had them start early here in Arizona, and then we got a wet monsoon, so we were lucky. But we're going to be the victims again, and Arizonans are tired of being the victims. We got to get people back out into our forest to thin them, to take care of them, to manage them. That's what we have to do. If we can get that done, and I think we've got with Secretary Perdue and Secretary Zinke, we've got a golden opportunity to get that put into place. And Arizona's going to be leading the way because we're right on the front burner of that.
As I recall, there was an environmental movement to prohibit the harvest of burned timber because there was still good harvest there?
There was. In fact, my first term, we had the big Wallow Fire.
Yeah.
And we brought a mobile sawmill out of Oregon. They didn't cut one tree because of the Forest Service, local Forest Service, and the environmentals. This is just actually ludicrous, you know. But we've got to be good on our facts to show them why, when we see these crown fires, we're burning and sterilizing soil. That we're not repairing, we're actually having a detriment to the ecology of the forest. And that's where all of us want to be, is good stewards. And that's why we're here today, is here's a group of good stewards making sure that what we have today we'll have for tomorrow and future generations.
And then let's talk about NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
How important to the Arizona folks?
It's huge. You know, this is our biggest trading partner. And but what it did bring is we've got a gentleman in the White House who's all about contracts and about business. I'm a businessman that went to Congress. And I don't know of anybody that doesn't look at contracts before 5 years. And in the case of NAFTA, well over 20 years before we re-looked at it. So this is a good opportunity, I think a great opportunity to look at how each of our companion countries are getting along, where we can make some changes, how we can facilitate helping each other out, because it's a win-win, not a lose-win or a lose-lose.
And are we going to be able to increase trade with China and countries like that?
Oh, I think we will. I think the president, his point is that he'd rather have a single binary type of trade agreement instead of a multiple application. And there's some good reasons here, because when you get into the multifactorials of multiple countries, it becomes hard for trade infringements or to have some jurisdictions. Whereas on a one-on-one, you have a very good tick for tack. And I think that's a great way to be, is keep it simple, stupid, I think is the old moniker. And I think that's a good way to start.
And finally, you're going on some foreign trips soon.
I am. And so in August, we went to Germany, Lithuania, and Norway to look at the influence that our plethora of energy products are having. In fact, Lithuania is astounded that they have now reduced their dependence on Russia from 100% to less than 30%. Our first cargo of liquefied natural gas is showing up right there. They invested in that. Now look at what we're doing there. I'm now going in 2 weeks over to Vietnam, to Hong Kong, and to Singapore, where they're very poor in energy, and they're very interested in looking at what the United States can look at in exporting there. So this is a great opportunity to be America, where we're doing energy production on a conscientious, ecologically sound principle. And you know what? It makes the world go around when we have a big say in the world stage.
Congressman, thank you, and continued success. Congressman Paul Gosar, Arizona. It's 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning on WGN Radio Chicago. Coming up, a visit with the first lady president in the 123-year history of the National Hay Association. That comes up when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. At World Dairy Expo every year, we get an update on the hay industry, production, price, and where people need it. And a young lady from South Dakota is in the hay business, Amy Freeberg, and you are coming up on a historic event in the National Hay Association. Tell me about it.
I am so excited. I'll be the president of the National Hay. In fact, I am the president now, and I'll be serving for the next year. We're coming into our 123rd year of an annual meeting every year. I'm the first lady to serve as president of the National Hay, and it's very exciting. My husband and I have been in the business for 45 years, and I've attended 37 years of National Hay annual meetings. And so we know the folks of the National Hay really well, and it's very exciting for me to represent that industry and that association.
Historic event. And of course, I go back to Don Kiefer, who served as president for quite a while.
Yes, Don was our executive director for 25 years and did just a super job. And so you've been very kind. You've always stopped by and visited with us in the hay industry here at the World Dairy Expo. And we appreciate that because we are the third, number three crop in the United States. And it's a very important crop all across the country.
Talk to me about the crop year just ending. Good, bad, average.
Well, you know what? All across the United States, it's everybody had a different type of year. I live in southeast South Dakota, and so across the state of South Dakota, there was a lot of drought and up into North Dakota. But where I live, clear down in the southeast corner, we're in the Missouri River bottom. And so we actually mudded our crop in this spring. We had a pretty wet spring. But the other thing that happened for 20 years ago, we lost 1,800 acres of alfalfa to winter kill. This year, we lost 1,600 acres to winter kill. And that happened from rain that we got clear back on Christmas. Very unusual. The weather is very unusual. So we replanted back, and first and second cutting went well. Third, ever since the 4th of July, now this is just in my area, it's been miserable. And it looks like we mudded in our corn and beans and hay, and it looks like we're going to mud them out here come this fall unless it just really settles down. So we'll see. But, you know, this is a great time to visit with us because we're just coming back from our national convention. So you get to talk to people all across the United States. And, for instance, today I talked to one of our customers from Illinois. He's never had such a good year. It's just been really good for him this year. So, you know, what works for one person one year doesn't necessarily work that well for everybody.
No such thing as normal weather anymore. It seems to be abnormal. Let's talk about the export market because we do ship hay overseas.
There's a lot of hay shipped overseas. And so in the National Hay Organization, there's 33 companies that have joined together, and they're a subcommittee of the National Hay, and they're the USEFEC, or United States Forage Export Council. That whole industry has done some rebounding, which is a good thing, because they were down a couple of years ago, and then they had that large carrier that went bankrupt, and that impacted them. And then they had the port issues 2 years ago with the longshoremen. So they've struggled, but you know what? Their industry is in better shape right now. And I think they had a fairly decent year up in that area making hay.
In what form do we export it? Pellets, bales, what?
Yes, it goes in pellets and it goes in cubes. And then those bigger bales of alfalfa are compressed. And so since we live in the middle part of the country, we'd never do compression because we're just too far away from the ports. But those people over there compress their bales and then put them in the containers and away they go. And they're in good shape out there.
So looking ahead, what do we see in the way of hay prices across the country?
I think like every year, Orion, we're just looking at that better hay is always going to bring a better price because it just seems like the industry is asking for 160, 170, 180 relative feed value. It's the hardest to get. It isn't, you know, you have to work really hard. The weather conditions have got to play with you to get that kind of relative forage quality. But you know, pretty good prices, sometimes a dollar a point, sometimes a little bit more. I'll tell you what we're struggling with right now is freight. And I don't know if that's because of the hurricanes down south, but it seems like our freight is just really hard to find those trucks. And you can raise all the hay you want, but if you can't put it on a truck and move it to your customer on the other end, you're just not in a very good position.
Madam President, thank you very much, and we'll see you again next year at World Dairy Expo.
Thank you for coming by and giving us the exposure that I feel like the hay industry deserves, and you have a good year yourself.
Will do. Amy Freebird, President of the National Hay Association.
And we're coming up to news time here on WGN Radio Chicago. Then in the second half hour, Max Armstrong will talk to Bob Splitt with Allendale in McHenry, Illinois, about the numbers that USDA issued in the October report on Thursday of this week. And no different from any other monthly crop report we get during the growing season. There's not full agreement on the numbers on the part of producers or on the part of traders in the commodity world. So we'll see what Bob Splitt has to say about that. Meanwhile, this week, the sub-meetings dealing with the rewrite of NAFTA continued, and I think we have a long way to go before we get the NAFTA situation straightened out, but you might be interested in the fact that U.S. negotiators at talks to renew the North American Free Trade Agreement yesterday formally asked Canada to address a bilateral dispute over dairy pricing. That's a request the Canadians are set to resist. U.S. dairy producers are unhappy that Canadian farmers this year started selling milk proteins to domestic processors at a discount, and that hurt the flow of American imports. U.S. officials say Canadian farmers are overproducing milk, contributing to depressed world prices, and that led President Donald Trump to declare in April that what Canadian farmers had done to our dairy farm workers, quote, is a disgrace. So the dairy war between Canada and the United States is being discussed now in some of these preliminary meetings that come about because of the rewriting, at least President Trump hopes, of the NAFTA agreement put in place way back in 1994. Thank you very much, Roger Badish, for that update on the news. And we're moving into the second half of the Saturday morning show. We'll be talking the October crop report numbers as Bob Splitt of Allendale in McHenry sits down and talks market numbers with Max Armstrong. Oh, and we do have one more major outdoor farm show this year, the Sunbelt Expo. Moultrie, Georgia. That gets underway next Tuesday. It's a three-day show continuing through Thursday, October 19th. Hard to believe we're already halfway through the month of October, but indeed we are. And coming up the last week of the month, something that I always enjoy, my battery charging week, it's the annual convention of the National FFA organization. It's an event that really gets underway at the beginning of the week, but the convention itself getting underway on Wednesday, the 25th, and it will go through Saturday, the 28th, with the election and introduction of the new National FFA officer team. Looking forward again to being a part of that event and hosting coverage on RFD-TV of every session of the National FFA Convention in Indianapolis. Right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and if you've been waiting for a new Agricultural Labor Act, well, we may get there. Not right away, but we'll talk about it when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. But the folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. They're products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. And this professional strength formula dissolves, well, the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, but at the same time, color-fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around since 1947. It's still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check us out at whinkwink.com.
For the past two decades, I've been listening to America's farmers and ranchers complain about the Guest Worker Act, making it too complicated, too burdensome, too expensive to get the farm labor onto the farms and ranches when they're needed. But now there finally may be some hope, and I hope you will agree, and I hope you will support the Agricultural Guest Worker Act, introduced by former chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Bob Goodlatte. And he describes the program as replacing the H-2A program with what will be called the H-2C program. And here are some of the reasons why I think we should support it. And certainly if you're in agriculture needing guest workers on the farm or ranch, you should support it. Goodlatte says it would allow experienced, unauthorized agricultural workers to continue working in agriculture by joining the H-2C guest worker program. It would give employers the opportunity to invest their time training workers for specialized or hard-to-fill jobs by allowing workers to stay for a longer period of time and provide flexible touchback requirements. It would allow the forestry industry, dairies, raw food processors, and other year-round agricultural employers to participate when adequate domestic labor cannot be found. And it would solve a lot of problems for American farmers and ranchers who need to get labor when they need it, when the crops are ready to harvest. It's called the Guest Worker Agricultural Act, and I think it deserves your support. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. We'll talk market numbers in that October crop report when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, on Thursday, the numbers for the October crop report were issued by the Department of Agriculture, and as is usual when those reports come out during the summer growing season, there's never full agreement on what those numbers say. Max, is that right?
Well, you know the old grain trade adage, Orion, that big crops get bigger. That's the case, apparently, for the United States corn crop. Because USDA, when they came out with the October report this week, revised upward the size of the corn crop based on a higher yield per acre estimate. They boosted the yield per acre by almost 2 bushels to 171.8 bushels to the acre. And that then raised the entire United States corn crop production to 14.3 billion. That's up 1% from the estimate of last month. 14.3 billion would be down about 6%. From the production of 2016. Now let's take a look at soybeans. A bit of a surprise there. Now this will be a record soybean crop in the United States, 4.43 billion bushels, but they revised downward the number a little bit from the estimate of a month ago. That's because they revised downward the yield per acre, 49.5 bushels. That's down 4/10 of a bushel from last month. It's also down, of course, from the level of a year ago. Yields for both corn and beans down from where they were in 2016. Nevertheless, there have been some farmers, as they've been reporting in from the combines to us in recent days, who've had yields better than last year, as we've heard in their indications. Some, for example, in East Central Illinois were telling us that this week. Now back to that USDA report. Right after it came out on Thursday, I talked about it with Brian Split of Allendale Incorporated, asking him, first of all, about that surprise in the soybean estimate.
It is, Max. The USDA set the stage for a little bit of a bullish report here, and the trade reacted immediately to that. We have so far taking out highs that were made on the August 10th WASDE report, and close above that would be very friendly. But as far as what USDA has done is they did lower the yield from 49.9 bushels per acre to 49.5, also carrying in the reduction in old crop ending stocks that we saw in the quarterly stock report.
As you're reacting here, just following the release of that October report, looking ahead a few days, is it likely in your mind that this report will have worked its way through rather quickly and we'll start to take a look at some other factors?
Well, I think the fact that we are seeing the domestic stocks tightening up right now in a time when seasonably the soybeans do like to rally. And we're going into a time frame where it's very important to start focusing on South America. So with South American concerns still being the dryness in Brazil and the slight planting delays that we are seeing there, that is going to put a little bit more of a pressure on our export program here. If Brazil planting delays continue, the buyers are going to continue to come to the U.S. for soybeans. And this report just told us that the expectation is we're going to have less of them now.
The Chinese demand, the Chinese crush, it remains strong, does it not?
Yes, the Chinese demand has been a story year after year. The USDA continues to increase their demand estimates at the beginning of every new marketing year by roughly 3% from the last year, and that has proven to not be enough year over year. I think it's pretty incredible that if you think back to the size of last year's domestic soybean crop, which was a record, and then you go back to last year's Brazilian soybean crop, which was also a record, and throughout the course of the marketing year, we still had our carryout expectations drop throughout the year from about 475 million bushels down to 300 million bushels. So that's 175 million bushels of extra demand that we're seeing throughout the course of the marketing year, and Chinese demand just continues to run rampant.
Finally, in the last half minute here on soybeans, is it your feeling that these soybean yield numbers, these first ones we've been getting, some very strong numbers, might taper off a little bit as the harvest goes on? What do you think about that?
It does sound like a lot of producers are a little disappointed with the bean yields that they're seeing. In a lot of instances, probably about 5 bushels per acre less than maybe what they were anticipating. In some more extreme cases, maybe 10 bushels per acre. But I cannot discount that there are producers out there that are happy with their bean yields and maybe slightly better than expected. But if I had to say out of every 10 producers I talk to, maybe 6 to 7 are slightly disappointed, and you know maybe 3 or 4 are thinking it's about what they thought or a little better.
Doggone it, they cut the acreage and still found more corn. They raised the yield per acre. Where did they find the corn in that report, Brian?
Well, I do think that the corn yields have held on a lot better than soybean yields. As producers have been getting into the field, they have been rather happy with the yields that they're seeing. I talked to a producer today in northern Illinois that typically grows 190 bushel corn, and a lot of his early yields have come in around 250 to 260 bushels per acre. So there's a lot of good crop out there, and I do think the corn yields have held on better than soybeans, but we did see the acres go down. The yield was increased from the previous report by almost 2 bushels per acre. But the thing that I think is really important is that even as we are seeing an increase in our domestic production, which is showed on this report, the world stocks to use is decreasing. So again, even though domestic production is increasing, world stocks to use is now at the lowest levels in 4 years. And so if we see anything now disrupt in the corn market here, if yields do come back down, if they're not as big as what we see on this report, this is probably going to be the most bearish number that we see for this particular marketing year.
Well, let's talk about the harvest progress. Now, this weekly crop bulletin coming up on Monday will likely continue to show a slow pace of harvest, maybe even getting farther behind, don't you think?
That does seem to be the case. We've got numerous states running double-digit points behind the five-year average. And a lot of areas are continuing to get rain this week. So I would say that as we get into next week and look at the harvest progress next week, it's going to be a very similar story. And like you said, some areas falling behind even further.
But in the week ahead, if that forecast holds, it looks like more folks will be getting into the field. And we do know there's an amazing ability to harvest in a short period of time.
That is correct. We do have fantastic machinery right now that can get a lot of accomplished in a short period of time. In a weird way, it may sound funny for me to say this, but these harvest delays could be a little bit of a blessing in disguise. You know, we've had issues with the levels at the Mississippi River and barge freight only being able to carry, a percentage of what they should be able to, so the product is not able to move right now. And imagine if we had harvest progress running ahead of normal and we had that much more product that needed to be moved. So there really isn't a home for all this product right now. And if we can get the river levels moving and then get into the harvest a little bit here, I think the timing of that actually works out a little bit more favorable. Otherwise, we could see basis levels slipping even lower than they are in a lot of areas.
Brian Split with Allendale Orion as we visited with him after that October crop report, talking about two other interesting things and looking specifically at damage from the hurricane. The cotton production in the United States is down 3% from the estimate of a month ago. Down 3%, and I would imagine that is almost all hurricane damage. Yield expected to be 889 pounds per acre. That's down 19 pounds from last month. And if you look at the citrus forecast, I know some of the folks down in Florida were questioning this, wondering how USDA could really get their arms around it. But the orange forecast for this year is down 16% from the final utilization of a year ago. Florida, expected to bring in 54 million boxes, would be down 21% from last season. And the navel varieties in Florida would be down 30% from last season in the final utilization. Again, according to the USDA report that came out this week, Orion.
All right, Max. And as usual, we'll have to wait till the January crop report to get final numbers on crop production for this marketing year. And as usual, even with that report, there'll be some disagreements among producers and traders on how accurate those numbers are. But again, we're looking at the hurricane situation that has impacted some of our crops. And we have seen some dry weather in the northern part of the country. Still looking at that drought monitor map, Montana in severe drought, and a good part of North Dakota in severe drought as well. 9 minutes before news time at 6 o'clock here on WGN Radio, we have some closing market numbers to look at for the week when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Taking more of a look at the markets as we ended the week yesterday, the big news is the November soybean contract finished above $10 a bushel. Hasn't happened since July 31st, and it barely made it yesterday. November soybeans ended at $10.75, or I should say at $10. It reached that price during the day, but at the end, at the close, $10.25 per bushel. Meanwhile, December corn up 3¾ cents for the day yesterday, trading at 3.52¾ at the close, and December wheat rose 9 cents to $4.39½ a bushel. Soybean and corn futures drew additional support from the export trade. Yesterday, the Department of Agriculture reported export sales of U.S. soybeans in the latest week at more than 1.7 million tons, corn sales at about 1.6 million tons. But we'll start trading soybeans Monday at $10.25 a bushel. The news coming up after this on WGN Radio.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.